No, I was thinking he might have still been in earshot and been like, what's so fucking funny?
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
What's your favourite thing to watch online? You know, like on TikTok or Instagram
Reels.
That's
a loaded question.
No. Like, you know, that type of shit that you go, oh, I'll go on my phone for 5 minutes. You know, I'm going to jump in the shower now soon. But before I do, I just sit down for a minute and spend 5 minutes on my phone. And you spend like, you know, a good 45 minutes to an hour just wasting your time. What's your poison?
So recently, body cam footage in like, so I was watching some body cam footage of soldiers in Ukraine. And since then, now I'm getting older footage from Afghanistan.
Okay.
So there's stuff like that. And then dash cams.
Okay.
Mainly Britain, but like the American ones are good as well.
Do you know what mine is?
It could be fucking anything.
It's kind of two.
Cats.
Cats and dogs always come up. But there's two that I end up getting sucked into and I'm down a rabbit hole.
Eating.
Yes. One is cleaning videos. And the other is, as you said, eating, but more specifically, competitive eating. I get really, do you remember only like 2 weeks ago, we were in my parents' house and I was showing them videos of this woman who does competitive eating.
Yeah.
And she ate, I think it was a 12-inch pizza in 49 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you asked me how long it'd take me and I said, I've never tried to eat one competitively.
You could.
I'd have a guess at like 4 minutes.
Yeah, you could do competitive eating though. You really could. Like you're a fast eater and if you trained yourself to eat even faster, like if you, if you got like a regime down, you could earn us some money.
Well, I don't know because the closest I've had to death is
death
from a sausage roll.
Yeah, but that's because you're a gobshite.
I had a large sausage roll and I said, I can remember it now. Megan was washing pots and I walked through with a sausage roll and I said, how much do you think I could fit in my gob? And she said, don't.
Yeah, just don't.
And it were at least 3/4 of this sausage roll were in my gob and I bit down. And I was trying to chew. And then you made me laugh. And the sausage roll just went straight down my fucking throat in one piece. And I was dying. I was fucking choking. And you just stood there and watched me.
Yeah, because to be honest with you, just annoyed me. Because why would you do it? You know, I just thought you were doing it for attention, really. And I got annoyed.
Luckily, I coughed it back up.
I tell you something else. This isn't videos, but to do with the kind of competitive eating thing and all.
Yeah.
I don't know why it came up. I assume because I was watching so many competitive eating videos. But a page for a cafe or restaurant or whatever it was, I use the term restaurant loosely, in Benidorm.
Okay.
And they have this, I think it was called Belly Buster Challenger, you know, something along the lines of that. It was just this massive full breakfast.
Yeah.
Some of the pictures, because I do a before and after, are fantastic. They are so good. Like they look like they're dying after eating. If I find a good one, I'll post it in like the Facebook group or something. I'll share it in there. It's so fucking good.
See, saying about Belly Buster. So me and my dad, we always used to get on like them mini cruisers. We used to go to like Belgium, Norway, Sweden. And I can't remember where we were going, but we're on a mini cruise. And there was, see, I'm British. But I don't call myself a Brit. When I call someone a Brit.
You mean it as an insult?
They've got a bald head.
England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bald head. Usually overweight with like a crease at the back of the head.
Pack of hot dogs in the back of their neck. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love hate tattooed on the fucking hands. They're usually wearing Everlast, Lonsdale.
Lonsdale, yes. Classic.
So them knobheads came in and they sat at the table next to me and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the waiter came over and said, oh, can I get you anything? And don't forget, this guy's either Swedish, Norwegian, Belgian.
The waiter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, get us a belly buster. And the waiter looked at him like they were from out of fucking space.
Yeah.
And the guy who tried ordering the belly buster was like, yeah, you don't know what a belly buster is. And they're all laughing at him.
Yeah.
And I just looked over and I was like, dickheads.
Uncultured swines.
Fucking dickheads.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
But you saying about cats and dog videos.
Yeah.
This is how powerful social media is, how quick response it is. So we have a Patreon member called Craig. And ever since we covered, was it the Timothy Treadwell one? It must have been. He keeps sending me bear videos, videos of bears. I only watched one or two when he first sent them. And that comes, if there is a bear video, it comes up.
I like how you and say as if he keeps harassing you with this. I think you bring up bears quite a lot.
No. I'm not saying he's harassing me with the video. He knows I want to watch them.
He knows you love bears.
But videos of bears never came up on my social media. Now they do all the time.
Not all the time for me, but I'd say regularly enough. I get a lot of animal videos.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Anyway, with that out the way, that just, you know, I mean, it's kind of, we're talking about brain rot. I think we're doing the same to you now. I mean, you don't need to hear about the shit that we watch.
Yeah.
But I would highly recommend watching competitive eating. It is enjoyable. I'm just sat there like, how are you doing this? Anyway, bit of business to attend to before we get into today's episode.
Again?
Always. We have a few shout outs to do. So first we have Liz, who bought us two coffees. Liz said, love your absolutely hilarious bullshittery. Please have a pint, gin or something on me. And then she also said, I know this will probably only cover a half pint. I have to say, first off, sorry, Liz, thank you so much. We appreciate you and your support. It means the world to us.
Yeah, thank you.
No, you are right, Liz. The price of drink is astro-fucking-nomical.
Well,
it's scandalous.
I just want to say, thank you, Liz. Really appreciate it. But I have 2 points. Gin. Who the fuck do you think is drinking gin?
I had a gin once, nearly got sick.
And what does she mean, bullshittery?
Just to carry on. A bollocksology, if you will.
So I thought you were having a pop at me.
Do you remember that time you made me a gin?
Gin?
Yeah, we were at my auntie's house. She was doing like a Christmas party and she kind of just like had drinks out, you know, you can kind of make your own. And I was like, I've never actually had gin before. And you made me a gin and tonic. And I was like, I'm going to die. What is this? Why is this
horrible.
So popular? Disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting.
Horrific.
Yeah.
Never again.
I think only alcoholics who are numb to it can drink it.
Outrageous. Anyway, our second shout out is a new Patreon member, May. Now, Neil, when I say the name May to you, what comes to mind first? I had 2 reference points.
Okay, so I appreciate it, May, but if your parents named you after the month, I'm not into that. Like, meet September. And all that.
I think seasons are worse.
Yes.
Like, I'm autumn.
Yeah.
And I da 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 da. Like, that's the whole tone, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that real, like, yeah.
But May is a real name, so.
Well, I'll tell you where my mind went first. So the first one was May West, so icon.
Oh, you're, May Weather.
You're, well, let's leave him out of it. But May West, iconic. The second, I went to Justin Timberlake.
Who's May West?
Mae West, she was an actress, model, icon of old Hollywood.
Clearly not, but okay.
Right. The second reference point was Justin Timberlake.
Oh.
NSYNC. It's gonna be May. Yeah. I don't know how we can play around with the name. I really had more reference points than fucking about with your name.
May.
Mayo. I don't think you'd probably want the reference to mayonnaise, and you know, unless you're into that, then how's it going, Mayo?
Yeah. So, with that out of the way, what you got for us today?
Well, Neil, today we are going to be talking about the murder of Dimebag Daryl.
A druggie?
No.
Dimebag?
Yeah, Dimebag. It's a nickname.
Is it?
You know, like Mayo and that's all we got for mouth. Yeah, it was a nickname.
Okay.
Daryl Lance Abbott was born on the 20th of August, 1966, in Texas. The son of Jerry Abbott, a country music producer, it was no surprise when Daryl himself took an interest in becoming a musician. After receiving a guitar and amp for his 12th birthday, he began his venture into music. Now, his father did say that Daryl had initially shown more interest in learning to play the drums, but apparently his brother Vinny hogged them, and Daryl thought, bollocks to this, I'll try my hand at guitar.
Could have got two sets of drums.
Would have been very noisy though, wouldn't it? The fucking walls would be shaking.
He could have done what they did in Step Brothers. Teabag his drum set. He's not going to want to go on it then.
Now, Daryl's music taste was slightly different to that of the music his father was producing. Daryl was more into the metal scene. In 1981, Daryl, along with his brother Vinnie Paul, formed a group. With Daryl on lead guitar, Vinnie as drummer, Terry Glaze on rhythm guitar, Tommy D. Bradford on bass, and Danny Hart on lead vocals. The band was initially christened Gemini before switching the name to Eternity and finally settling on the name that still to this day is a staple in many metalheads' playlists, Pantera.
You're looking at me I should know.
Yeah, you're just looking at me completely blank. This means nothing to you.
No.
never heard the name. Yeah, very big, very popular.
When?
Like I said, they started in the 80s through the 90s and... Even now, they're a very popular, like I said, they're still a staple in a lot of people's playlists. They've only just played Dublin.
Oh.
Yeah. Will we insert a couple clips here for anyone? I think majority of listeners will know Pantera, but if you're unfamiliar,
Google it.
Here's a couple of clips of some of their hits. So that's Pantera, lads. Ring any bells? Yes, no, maybe? Too many, not enough?
Still not for me.
We have to wait for them to comment anyway. They can't reply to us in this moment. The year after forming the group, Donnie left, and Terry took over lead vocals while continuing on rhythm guitar. Tommy then followed and was replaced by Rex Brown, who is now the longest-serving member of the group. In 1983, Daryl, at just 16 years of age, Pantera released their first album, Metal Magic. Their style at the time was more glam rock, taking inspiration from the likes of Kiss and Van Halen, which Van Halen would later become a phrase that they would use before a show.
I've heard of him.
A very popular, Eddie Van Halen.
I didn't know his name. Really.
Van Halen is the group name and then Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was their way of reminding each other to just kind of let it go and have a good fucking time when they're out on the stage, you know?
Right.
Wouldn't that be deadly? If people were like using your name or your group or something associated with you as a way to be like, just fucking get it on. If they were using your name, your association, whatever, as a reminder, just have some fucking fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Moving on to 1985. Now on their third album, the band start to lean towards a more heavy metal sound. With their style evolving, they needed their vocals to reflect this, and the decision was made for Terry to part ways with the band. Multiple vocalists were tried, but none of them were quite right. That was until the following year, in 1986, when they met Phil Anselmo. He had exactly what they were looking for, with Rex Brown stating, quote, "From the first time the guy walked in the door, we could just tell he had this aura."
They always say that, don't they? Had this aura about him.
The vibes.
Yeah.
Moving into the 90s, Pantera released their fifth album, Cowboys from Hell, widely referred to as their official debut album. By 1992, with the release of their sixth album, Pantera were starting to find mainstream success. Now, did you know that the Dallas Stars fight song, Puck Off, is by Pantera?
No.
I thought I literally just included that because I know we have a few listeners who are into hockey.
Puck Off.
And I know you, yeah.
Fucking smart bastard.
I listened to it. I liked it. I like it.
Dallas Stars. Like, I don't know now. I'm not as into ice hockey as I used to be, but they used to be like top of the league.
Yeah, apparently the ABBA brothers were big fans of the Dallas Stars. So I think they kind of jumped at the chance to write their fight song.
Huh?
Now, in the years that followed, Pantera became an extremely successful band with incredibly devoted fans. During their 18-year run, they sold over 7 million records. Their 1994 album, Far Beyond Driven, was number one in the charts and sold 1.4 million copies.
Doing better than Big Lurch then?
Just a tad, but I'd really appreciate if you would just stop shitting on that man's career. Still waiting. We're over a year later now. Where's your debut album?
Yeah, still get listeners asking. I'm trying to find an AI what's good enough for my voice.
We'll get there, lads. It takes time, you know? Although Pantera had now found mainstream success, in 2003, after nearly two decades, Pantera disbanded. There seemed to have been quite a lot of friction between Phil and the Abbott brothers. While Phil initially said that the breakup of the band was a mutual thing, it didn't seem as though Daryl and Vinny felt the same way. With comments being made about Phil's drug use, he fired back by saying in an interview that Daryl, quote, deserves to be beaten severely.
Say how it is.
It was getting a bit, you know, handbags at dawn.
Dimebags.
Very good. Nice one. Now, you remember I mentioned Rex Brown, who came into the band?
Yeah.
Poor old Rex. He's just in the middle of all this. He dismissed this behaviour as he said, she said, bollocks. And he didn't actually use the word bollocks as far as I'm aware. I added that in. But yeah, he said, she said, and that he wasn't going to be getting involved in it. So Rex has just stood there, you know.
Yeah.
Like a little dog.
Helpless.
Yeah. Not knowing what to do. Years later, Vinny would say, quote, the singer had gone off and done his own thing, and it really felt like we were not being respected at all. He'd done it before, but this time it had gone to another level. Yeah, I mean, you can understand his point there.
Yeah.
This is when Daryl and Vinny decided to form their new band, Damage Plan. And the following year, the tour began. On the 8th of December 2004, at the Alrosa Villa nightclub in Columbus, Ohio, there were four bands playing that night, two of them being local bands, Volume Dealer and 12 Gauge. With around 250 people in attendance, it must have felt a slightly more intimate gig, especially given the venue's capacity of 600.
Well, it's not good for the performers, but for the spectators, there won't be a queue for the bar.
See, that's you, Neil. You're always looking on the bright side. Very yeah. Positive person. I've said it about you before. Now, outside the venue stood a man by the name of Nathan Gale. Before entering the venue, Nathan waited outside in the car park, wearing a pair of thick glasses and a Columbus Blue Jackets hockey jersey over a hoodie.
Why did you have to say thick glasses?
That's how they were described. You know?
Why is that important?
I don't know.
Short-sighted bastard.
He also had a shaved head. Does that? I took that out. I was like, why is that? Why does that matter? But then I included the glasses thing. Like, he had a shaved head, thick glasses. He was wearing a hockey jersey over a hoodie.
Poor Nathan.
As one fan passed by him, he says to Nathan, hey, why aren't you watching the show? To which
Because I could see it from here.
Them glasses, they are good. No, he didn't say that. Nathan replied with, I don't want to see no shitty local bands. Now, oh. Nathan, this is a very common attitude. There's so many people who go to gigs who are like, ugh, I'm just here for the main event. I don't want to, which I hate that shit. Every time I've gone to a gig, I've always watched the opener and the support because...
You've paid the ticket.
not just that I've paid the ticket, but I want to support them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's probably a big thing for some of these bands. Yeah. Or, and even if it's not a big thing, if they're used to touring, they still want the support. And you never know. I found one of my favorite bands. When I went to see Billy Talent years ago, their opening act was a pretty much unknown band from the UK.
Yeah.
They ended up being one of my favorite bands. Had I like not bothered and shown up later, you know.
See, it's the same with boxing, and I've never understood it. So say even if you've got a big like main eventer,
mm-hmm.
could be Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. If you watch that fight card on the TV, there might be five fights total. But realistically, there's eight, maybe 10 fights. Some of them aren't televised.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll even go to watch them. I'm going to watch all 10 fights. Whereas you'd have people who show up, pissed up, 10 minutes before the main event starts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with it.
Just go to the event.
Yeah.
Just watch that, support them all, you know?
And 9 times out of 10, no joke, some of the fights that aren't televised are better than the main event.
Well, I mean, it's also like this, you know, headliner that you're wanting to see. They had to start somewhere at some point.
Yeah.
For them to get to that point, you know, they had to be that shitty local band.
Yeah.
Dickheads. But anyway, back to Nathan and this random
glasses.
Fan.
Yeah.
Nathan with the glasses. You know, Becky with the good hair. The fan says to him, you know, you can at least go inside and stay warm. And Nathan tells him, no, I'm going to wait for Damage Plan.
I've been told.
The club owner, Rick Cortella, said that he had noticed Nathan, but he just thought that he was a fan without a ticket, hoping to catch a glimpse of one of the band members.
Of course he noticed him with thick glasses. Look at him with thick glasses.
Eventually, though, one of the guys helping the band set up did tell Nathan to leave, although he didn't go far. He waited for Damage Plan to take the stage shortly after 10 p.m. before jumping a 6-foot-high fence and entering the venue through a side door.
So I wonder why they told him to leave.
Because he didn't have a ticket and he was just loitering about. And they didn't want him bothering, you know, any band members or what have you. Once inside, he moves quickly through the crowd and towards the stage. Others didn't think much of this, assuming he was just making his way to the front, you know, possibly wanting to stage dive. Damage Plan had only just took the stage. They were less than 2 minutes into their set, performing their new single from their debut album, Newfound Power. This is when Nathan jumps onto the stage. Billy Payne, the singer for Volume Dealer, who saw Nathan make his way to the stage, said, quote, "The dude was way determined. He was on a mission. He looked angry. He was walking like he was going into battle." Nathan pulls out his Beretta 9mm pistol and moves directly towards Daryl. Now, Daryl at the time, you know, he's performing, he's headbanging, his hair's covering his face. He's, you know what I mean? He's in his own, as you would say. He didn't even see Nathan approach him. And before anyone really knew what was happening, Daryl had been shot multiple times at point blank range.
Why?
One shot to the right cheek, another to his left ear, the back of his head, and to his right hand.
Why did you do that?
Well, I'm going to tell you. You're very impatient.
I just, it's mental, isn't it? Just getting up on stage and...
Very scary. Very fucking scary. His brother...
See, it'd have been Andy if his glasses had fell off. His aim would have been off. His aim would have been terrible.
I like how this episode has turned into just, it's just... Nathan's glasses, and then everything surrounding it. Daryl's brother Vinny, I'm sure completely in shock, stood up from behind his drum kit as a security guard tackled Nathan to the ground as he continued to fire shots into the crowd.
Oh shit, so he turned on the crowd?
He was just shooting. He was just shooting.
Fucking hell.
I think at that point, it was just panic. Someone grabbed him and he just kept firing.
Yeah.
Although some did notice Nathan making his way towards the stage, not everyone realised what was going on. Once shots had been fired, the lead singer of Damage Plan, Patrick Lockman, grabs the mic and yells for someone, anyone, to call 911. Some members of the crowd just thought firecrackers had been let off. Others thought it was the popping of the speakers. Or possibly that someone had fired a cap gun.
Fucking cap gun.
No one knew what was going on.
It's
it was a bit of
a difference, that.
I know, but I mean, to them, there was loud music playing. People are yapping. They're talking, you know, it's a whole, there's a lot going on in that moment. Yeah. One of the men who was working security, he initially thought this was a gimmick. He said that people were still fist pumping and enjoying the show. He actually thought it was a hoax.
Oh, shit.
Again, like I was saying, like, there's a lot going on in this moment, you know. Someone who realised that this wasn't a joke was Travis Burnett, a former soldier and crew member for Volume Dealer. He dropped his drink and ran towards the stage to try and disarm the man. As he tries to grab Nathan, another shot is fired, grazing Travis's arm. It took just 3 minutes for police to arrive on scene. What seems to be an incredibly quick response time to us must have felt like an eternity for those in that room.
Yeah, 3 minutes. Like,
luckily, he was on patrol in the area, so he was able to get. I mean, I say luckily, relatively quick. People lost their lives. Like, it's. Officer James Nigmeyer walks out from behind the backstage, carrying a 12-gauge Remington shotgun. At this point, Nathan is holding drum tech John Brooks hostage with a gun to his head. As Nathan starts to move towards the back of the venue, the officer who stood 20 feet away takes aim and fires. Nathan is shot in the head and drops to the ground, putting an end to any further devastation. John, who was being held hostage, was unharmed.
Good fucking shot, then.
And with a shotgun.
Huh?
And with a shotgun.
Yeah.
Now, remember, while all of this is going on, Daryl is still laid on the stage, bleeding out. One of the concertgoers, Mindy Reese, who happened to be a registered nurse, she stood there seeing all of this happen. You know, she can hardly believe it. And she said that she thought to herself, you know, fuck this, I'm a nurse, he needs my help. And she rushed to Daryl's aid.
Fair play to her.
Mindy spent 15 to 20 minutes administering chest compressions to Daryl before paramedics arrived on scene. But it was too late and he was pronounced dead at the age of 38. Daryl was buried in Moore Memorial Garden Cemetery in Arlington, Texas. Eddie Van Halen, one of Daryl's biggest influences in music, was in attendance to pay his respects. Eddie spoke at the funeral, and he also brought his black and yellow tape-striped guitar to be buried with Daryl.
What, if you were to be buried, what would you want buried with you?
Bury me with my MAC Creme de Nude lipstick.
Okay.
That's something I love. I've used it for years. It's a tried and tested product.
Well, that's only little, so even if you're cremated, I can chuck it in the urn.
Mm.
For me, because I think he's going to outlive me, my signed Sugar Ray Leonard boxing glove. Bury that with me. If I'm gone before him.
Which you will be. That man is fit as a fiddle. Have you ever seen a more healthy, in shape retired boxer in your life?
No. Usually with boxers, as soon as they retire, it's not the fact about the gain weight. That's a given, that they're not training anymore. They're going to gain a bit of weight.
Yeah.
But the face goes to shit. Everything just drops. They just look so old once they retire. But like Sugar Ray Leonard, he's fitter than people who are still boxing now.
Yeah.
It's not on.
The night of the Columbus nightclub shooting, a further 3 people were injured by gunshot wounds, and 3 more were murdered that night.
Fucking hell.
Nathan Bray, 23 years old, a fan of the band, who had jumped on stage to try and help disarm the gunman. Nathan was shot in the chest. Jeff Mayhem Thompson, 40 years old, one of the crew members for Damage Plan. He tackled Nathan to the ground. Jeff was shot in the chest, back, and upper thigh during the struggle.
It's got to be one of the best middle names I've ever heard.
I think it was more of a nickname, but.
Oh.
And Aaron A. Hulk, 29 years old, an employee at the club who had also attempted to restrain Nathan. Aaron was shot 6 times, 4 in the chest, 1 in the hand, and another to his leg.
How much fucking ammo did he have?
We'll talk about it. So let's talk about the man behind the shooting, Nathan Gale. Nathan was born on the 11th of September, 1979, making him 25 years old at the time of the shooting. He stood at 6'3" and 250 pounds. He was described by those who knew him as troubled, but not known to be violent.
2 pounds of that were his glasses.
Not letting it go now, are you? Overall, Nathan was seen as being a good guy, quiet, and never really bothered anybody. During his high school years, Nathan had struggled with substance abuse. But he did go on to graduate from high school and complete a rehabilitation program before enlisting in the Marines in the year 2002. His mother Mary was said to have been so proud of him and the progress that he had made in life that she decided to mark his achievements with a gift. Mary presented her son with a Beretta pistol.
Oh.
Just 18 months into his career with the Marines, Nathan was said to have been discharged in November of 2003 due to mental illness. Schizophrenia.
Oh, okay.
After leaving the Marines, Nathan worked in construction, landscaping, and various car parts stores. His former employees state that Nathan was upfront about his mental illness. He also said that they got on well, and his employer felt comfortable enough to ask how he was doing, check in with him, and make sure he was taking his pills. Nathan would always tell him that he was, although it's unknown if or when he was actually keeping up with his medication. But either way, his employer maintained that Nathan was always a good and faithful employee to him. On the other side of this description of Nathan, the owner of a tattoo parlour across the street from Nathan's home said that he had become a regular there. He had been a customer receiving piercings and a large custom tribal tattoo. But Nathan would go to the business on a daily basis.
Oh, just to hang out.
Yeah, and this was something that the owner wasn't too thrilled about. He stated that Nathan gave everyone a, quote, weird impression or gave them the creeps, and that he tried to keep Nathan away from his other customers.
Right.
One of the workers at the tattoo parlour had also likened Nathan to that of the Columbine shooters.
I don't know that one.
The school shooting?
I don't know which one that is, though.
It was like when I say the main one, the first one.
Oh, okay.
Like we mentioned earlier, Nathan was a bigger guy, and he put his physical capability to good use. He played offensive guard for Lima Thunder, a local semi-professional football team. While travelling between games, Nathan was often known to spend his time with his headphones on, listening to Pantera. Now, Nathan loved Pantera, with his affection for the band, I'd say, more fairly described as crossing over into more of an obsessive territory. On the 8th of April 2004, just 8 months before the shooting, Nathan attended a Damage Plan gig in Bogart's nightclub in Cincinnati. During the show, Nathan jumped onto the stage and proceeded to destroy lighting along with other stage equipment, resulting in damages of around $1,800.
So my guess is there he didn't take his meds.
Well, that is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, Nathan would say to people he was, but even his mother stated she didn't know.
Yeah.
She knew he had them, but the problem here was that the band wasn't really too bothered by the incident and decided not to press charges, even jokingly telling the crowd once Nathan had been removed, quote, I'd like to introduce you to the fifth member of the fucking band. You know, they're used to touring, they're used to shit happening, some fans getting a little bit out of hand, you know, is what it is.
But now they've said something, the crowd's there laughing along.
Well, he's already been removed.
Oh, okay.
But it's still, you know, had something been done about that previously?
Yeah.
It's criminal damage, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I was thinking he might have still been in earshot and been like, what's so fucking funny?
In the run-up to the shooting, friends of Nathan had noticed some changes in his behaviour. He had become more erratic, and they had started to distance themselves from him. His friends noted that he began laughing and talking to himself. They had witnessed him petting an imaginary dog, And he was also reported to have told them that God had instructed him to kill Marilyn Manson.
That'll be schizophrenia.
Will it? Dr. Neil's on the case. Nathan had become increasingly paranoid, stating that his favourite band, Pantera, had stolen his songs and that he was going to sue them.
What?
Yeah, he believed that he had wrote down lyrics and he said that they were stealing them from him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, following his death after the shooting, an autopsy was performed. No drugs were found in his system, including antipsychotics.
Yeah. See that coming.
To this day, police struggle to understand this crime. While speaking about the motive, or lack of motive, the chief of police said, quote, "There was no real serious problem with him. He was not the kind who drew a lot of attention. This is a shock to the community." Which it does kind of seem to be the case. The only other trouble that Nathan had gotten into, excluding the other incident that is directly linked to this band,
yeah,
was the month previous to the murder, on the 17th of November at approximately 3:20 a.m., Nathan was arrested for driving with a suspended license. So, yeah, you know, not great, but nothing violent, nothing outwardly aggressive. Now, police were said to have found two handwritten notes by Nathan. But they were cryptic. They were too hard to really obtain any kind of information that could lead to a viable reason for this. Nathan's motive for the murders is still unknown. Some like to make a connection to the murder of John Lennon, as it took place 24 years to the day that he had been murdered. I think that is purely coincidental, though.
Yeah.
What's more likely is that his belief that they were stealing lyrics from him spiraled into further delusions, or that he was desperately upset that his favourite band, Pantera, had broken up, and he did blame Daryl for this. Some who were there that night did recall Nathan shouting something before he fired a shot. It's not entirely clear, obviously music was playing, it was incredibly loud, yeah, you know.
Headbanging.
Headbanging and all that. But it's thought that he may have said something along the lines of, "You broke up Pantera," or "This is for breaking up Pantera." But we will never know for sure.
Yeah. Same thing though.
We don't even know if he did say that. That's just what a couple of people, I think he said like, you know. Trying to lip read here.
While I'm headbanging.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. Hair flying everywhere.
What is the point in headbanging? Because if you're going there to listen to the music, because you enjoy the music, but you're headbanging, it's just going to sound like you got your head out of an aeroplane window.
No, it doesn't. What's the point of gun fingers? What's that doing? Just wafting.
You can still listen to the fucking music while I'm doing it. And I haven't done that for like 20 years.
We may never know what the driving force was behind the shooting. But what we do know, though, is that after Nathan had been shot dead and police searched Nathan's body, they found a further 35 bullets.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
So he weren't going in there just to shoot Daryl.
I mean, it's very fucking scary.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, you kind of say, oh, luckily they showed up that quick. Four people lost their lives. Yeah, you know, it's great. It's kind of same as our last episode. And we're like, Jesus, could you imagine how prolific this guy could have been? He was.
Yeah.
9 people died in the space of 2 months.
See, and because he's not there to be interviewed, you don't know if his mindset was shoot Daryl, and then when the police get there, shoot his way out.
Mm-hmm.
Or was he going in there to shoot Marvin Daryl?
I mean, he did take a hostage. So, yeah. It's a very scary situation. Following the shooting, Officer James Nickmeyer was brought before a grand jury. He was not expected to be charged, but it's just part of protocol when lethal force has been used.
Yeah.
And on the 25th of May, 2005, James was cleared of any wrongdoing. James continued to work as a first responder for a further 3 years, but has since left the police. The reason for his departure being down to his diagnosis of PTSD, as well as severe anxiety disorder. He said on the matter, quote, "I found out real quickly that you don't have control over your brain. It's going to do what it's going to do." He also talked about the night of the shooting. Quote, "When tragedy strikes, There are people in this world who will step up and try to stop it. There are people who will stand up in the face of death and give their life to try and save others. They did that with no police there, with no guns. Those are the true heroes to me. Nathan's mother Mary has since said of buying her son the gun that was used in the shooting, quote, "I'll never, never be able to live that part down." She's also said about James, the officer who shot her son, quote, "I give that man credit. You'll never know how many lives he saved."
Yeah.
Fair play to her for being able to look at it from that perspective, you know. After the shooting, Daryl's family sued the club, blaming them for the tragedy, stating that their security were not competent in preventing the shooting. The case was settled out of court, and the club has since been demolished. And that is the murder of Dimebag Daryl, Nathan Bray, Jeff Mayhem Thompson, and Eric A. Hulk. Daryl's neighbours said of him, quote, "He was a hick with an attitude, and I say that respectfully." They also stated that, "I never cared for his music, but I'll tell you, they were quiet neighbours. That studio they had in their backyard is absolutely soundproof." That just, I don't know if you, your mind went there, but that just made me think of Tom Segura when he's doing that country accent. And he's like, "Well, how do, ma'am? Yeah. I tell you what." Daryl's brother, Vinnie Paul, has also since passed away. On the 22nd of June, 2018, Vinnie was found dead in his home of coronary disease at the age of 54.
Fucking hell.
Quite young.
Yeah.
There you go.
An interesting one, that.
It's just another case of, you know, a mental illness plays a big part.
Yeah.
In the reasoning for it. Like, we don't know his exact reason, what he was going through, what delusions he was facing.
We just know he didn't have any medication in his system.
Yeah, he wasn't medicated. We know that he thought they were stealing lyrics, and he also blamed Daryl for the breakup of Pantera. Yeah. Those are the most likely options. But we don't know how much further, you know, in his mind, you know, he'd elaborated on that.
It's scary when you think about it.
It is, and it's a very sad case, you know. Like, you know, Nathan Bray, 23-year-old, just go and see one of his favourite bands playing.
Yeah. One of them was just a worker at the club as well.
Yeah. And another was a crew member.
Yeah.
You know? Two people at work and a young fan. And, you know, all of those were injured because they tried to help someone else.
Yeah. Again, it's just medication. It comes down to the medication.
Yeah.
You know, it just goes to show how much of a difference it makes.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did have this discussion previously because, you know, if a condition is treatment responsive,
yeah,
you know, that's wonderful. But are they keeping up with the treatment?
Yeah.
That's kind of where the issue lies, you know?
Yeah. So, I know I'm not into heavy metal and stuff, but I think I'm going to go through their songs and see if there was anything lyric-wise what trigger him. Like,
you're going to go through every Pantera song.
Is there a lot?
A lot. A lot.
I was going to say, what if Daryl or someone said, "Prick with thick glasses"?
I hate people who wear glasses. I spit at people who wear glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he could have took that personal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that was ever uttered. And it, you know, even if it had, Phil was the singer, not Daryl.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. There's your theory.
So maybe Nathan was as confused as I was. So, with that done, what's the oddity?
The screaming mummy.
Well, a lot of mummies do that. My mummy did.
Your mummy. Please don't ever call her that again.
Me ma.
Mammy. So the screaming mummy was first discovered in 1935. She is thought to have been buried around 3,500 years ago.
It's a bit specific, isn't it?
Specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not really. I said about 3,500.
No, but you usually hear him say 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Three and eighth,
yeah.
They'd usually say three or four. Like,
well, it's
4,000 years.
Thought. Her body was found within a wooden coffin buried underneath the tomb of Senmut, who was an architect during the 18th dynasty of Egypt. Although we do not know who this woman was, the location of her body would indicate that she was a family member of Senmut, a relatively close family member.
Right.
Using CT scans to virtually dissect her body, they were able to estimate that she would have stood at about 5 foot tall when living. At the time of her death, she would have been around 48 years of age. She'd suffered from mild arthritis, which affected her spine, and she was also missing several teeth, which were likely lost in the lead up to her death, given that the tissue around the area hadn't fully healed.
So she'd been smacked in gob?
From the looks of it, yeah. No incisions could be found for embalming, and she still had all of her organs within her body. She wore a black wig made with braided date palm fibres, which had been dyed black with henna.
It's mental what they can find now. Like, mild arthritis and all that. It's crazy when you think about it. They can tell someone about 3,500 years old,
mm-hmm.
but they had mild arthritis.
Yeah. It really is incredible when you think about it.
It's unreal. And so a dead mummy can get a CT scan, but people can be waiting on NHS in the UK for fucking years.
How did I know it would come back round to this? Given the location of her burial...
Maybe that's how long she waited if she were in the UK, 3,500 years.
Given the location of her burial and the fact that she'd been buried with gold and silver, you can only assume she came from wealth.
Yeah.
Juniper resin and frankincense were buried with her. It's thought that these may have helped in preserving her body. They're also, you know, not the cheapest of imports either. Now, if you didn't guess from the title, there was something unusual about this mummy. Her mouth was wide open, giving off this horrifying appearance. It's thought that the reason for a shocking expression could simply be down to changes that occurred after death.
Oh, my head went a different way. I thought she might have had a heart attack as she went to bite an apple.
What does that mean?
Like, she went to bite the apple and had a heart attack, so that's why her mouth stayed open.
Are you being serious right now, or...?
Well, that's where my head went. I'm not saying it has to be an apple.
Fake?
Fake?
So, you know, to do with the theory that it could be down to changes that occurred after death, well, embalmers would usually wrap the jaw so that it stays closed. You know, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually going to fall open. But if she wasn't properly embalmed, her jaw could have fallen open afterwards. Her cause of death is unclear, but the other theory is that she died in agonising pain or was in a great deal of emotional torment at the time of her passing. And that the reason her face had frozen into this position could be because of cadaver spasms, which is similar to rigor mortis but happens immediately after death rather than a few hours.
Right.
But given that the mummification process takes, you know, around 40 days to complete, that kind of seems unlikely.
40 days?
Yeah. Even if the desiccation process for her was not quite as thorough as others we may have seen, I don't really think ancient Egyptians would be too keen on sending her to her final resting place with a gnarled or tortured look on her face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And obviously, I don't know, it's a weird one. Maybe, you know, there was some shady shit that had gone on and this was like a final fuck you to her.
Yeah.
You know, but then why would they bury her with the gold and silver? And although she still had her organs, which would usually be an indicator of poorly executed mummification process, she was still incredibly well preserved and clearly some level of care had been taken with her.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think it's changes after death or do you think cadaver spasms?
Yeah, well, I think it could be changes after death, but what if rigor mortis is set in and they couldn't close it?
You can, because rigor mortis will fade. The muscles will ease again.
Oh, okay.
So they could have, again, like I said, the 40-day process thing, they would have had time to readjust her body.
Yeah, okay.
It's weird. It's a hard one to...
Yeah.
As you would say, it's a ponder.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
It's not a word.
It is, I think.
So you're going to stick with the turtle biting an apple?
Yeah.
You're going to think she was biting into an apple, had a heart attack, and that was it?
Well, she was biting on something hard anyway because it smashed her teeth out.
But if she was crying or screaming or whatever, yeah, upset, yeah, died, and then, like I said, the cadaver spasm.
Yeah.
But it doesn't answer why she would have been left like that.
See, what I can't understand is, so they can do a CT scan and they can say, she had mild arthritis, but we can't tell you how she died.
Mm.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, it is, you kind of think, oh, it must be that they didn't properly embalm her, but why wouldn't they tape her jaw if they're going to, like, put the wig on her and the gold and silver and the juniper and frankincense and all? It's a weird one. There's, like, arguments for both sides.
Must be some sort of symbolic meaning.
Did you say bollock to me? Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.